Just a reminder, our podcast deals with crimes that are often violent and graphic in nature, so listener discretion is advised. So when in doubt, leave the kids out. Now, please let us take you back in time.
Hello, old time crime gal listeners, friends, fans, what's up? This is Melissa, here with my friend
Shannon. Hey guys.
Here for another episode. Now, last time we had Shannon tell a story, which I enjoyed.
Did you?
I did. I've listened back to it. Well, of course, editing before I put it out. And I like it. It went really well.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I like being surprised. I haven't done that in a while. I know. I like being surprised and listening to it. So today, this time, I have a story that I don't think you've heard of.
Probably not, which I will try again in the future.
Yes. When life gives us free time.
Yes.
Which is rare and few, far and few between.
Yes. But yes, I'm excited to hear what we have today.
So today, we're going to talk about the assault and attempted murder.
Oh, she turned her computer away from me. Usually yeah, I can see it.
You can't read ahead.
Okay. Assault and attempted
murder.
Okay.
Of 18-year-old Charles Hardeman. So this is a story where no one dies.
Okay.
So there is a sort of happy ending. It's always a happy ending when, you know, no one dies.
Yes, definitely.
But so this kid, like, is a fighter, survivor, and his story is one that is truly terrifying, and it's just crazy. So one of the most important people in his life betrayed him and helped several of his so-called friends beat, restrain, and toss him into a pond.
Oh, my gracious.
So there's this whole ordeal that happened. But it's a miracle he even survived. But so then there's, like, a car crash involved. There's a house fire. There's, like, there's tons of stuff. So I told you it was
yes,
a lot.
Yes, it's twisty.
So it starts off as a car crash.
Okay.
So you're at a scene of a car crash. Someone witnessed it. They called it in. So this was April 11, 2012. We're in Mississippi. So 911 got called out to help with this car crash. But there's just one vehicle in the accident.
Okay.
And it looked like the truck had just run into a tree.
Okay. So like they just crashed into the tree.
Yep, struck a tree.
Is somebody else calling in?
Somebody else called it in that, like, was like, well, you know, what, wondering what had happened. So inside the driver's seat was a young man. And it just seemed like someone just, you know, aimed the truck and hit the gas. And it didn't bother to stop, move, slam on brakes. Like, there was no indication
they
swerved. It just, like, they went into the tree.
Okay.
So, you know, and he was slipping in and out of consciousness. The EMTs were trying to help him. Like, so it's just this crash scene. But then one thing they noticed that was super strange was the kid was soaking wet. Like, his clothes were wet, his pants were wet, his shoes were wet, his hair. Nothing in the truck was wet. It wasn't like there was
just
water
him.
That spilled over as he crashed. He was soaking wet.
Okay, he was waterlogged.
It looked like he just got out of the shower, jumped in the truck, or, like, pulled from a pond and thrown in the truck.
Went swimming. And got in the truck.
Yes. So there's just no water everywhere. So then they're trying to help him. You know, when you're in fight or flight, apparently he was in fight. So he's, like, flailing around and, like, swatting at people and trying to fight because he's slipping in and out of consciousness, not really knowing what's going on.
Confused.
The people there are helping him.
Right.
And so they finally, like, get him calmed down and they're like, you know, hey, you know, we're here to help you. They calm him down and then they get him out of the truck onto the stretcher. And then, you know, things got a little weirder. So as they're getting him out of the truck and putting him on the stretcher, they noticed that a belt was tied to his ankle.
Okay.
And, you know, that's strange.
That's very strange.
And then, you know, they have to get a breathing tube in them because they're trying to revive them and bring them back and all this stuff. So they put the breathing tube in, but out of the breathing tube regurgitates, like, brown, dirty water.
Okay.
And I have in my notes, think Tar River.
Yes. That's the place where
right here, it's like muddy water. So that floats up the tube.
And I think Mississippi, I think muddy water places, you know.
So it's like he had been underwater.
Yes.
But he was in the truck.
Right, wet.
Still clinging on to life. So,
strange.
Like, what in the world has happened? Like, he's underwater. He's got water in his, you know, coming out the breathing tube, but he was in a truck. And so they have no idea what happened to him at this point because they're just coming up onto the
They're
scene.
Just trying to help him survive.
They're just called to a car crash, and you got this kid that's soaking wet.
And life-saving measures.
Yes.
So,
you know, police run the plates on the truck and realize that it's registered to 18-year-old Charles Hardeman.
So it's his truck. Okay.
And the driver's license they found on him matched that. So they knew that that's who they had. And so off to the hospital he goes to finish seeing if they could save his life. And then the police were there to figure out what exactly had happened. But as they're there at the car crash, a call comes through dispatch that there's a house fire at such and such residence.
Okay.
But they realize that such and such residence was the same exact one that's on this guy's driver's license.
So this is his house?
His house.
Oh, my goodness.
So then they have to go another place. Come on. So now they're
wondering, fire crews are on their way there.
Yes. Yeah. So now a fire, and a big house fire. Police? So at the same address that the truck was registered to. It's like, what in the world? So now the guy's house is burning down. So quickly they rushed over to this address to see what was going on. The house was not going to be able to be saved. Like, it was completely engulfed in flames at this point.
Did he, I know you're probably going to get to this, live on his own?
Well, he's 18, so this was actually his mom's house. Okay. This is where he lived.
His parents, okay.
But
I don't know if he had roommates or something, so.
The house is completely gone.
Oh.
So once everything settled down, they could begin to, like, look over the whole scene, you know, with a fine-tooth comb and discover that it was arson.
Okay.
So they were all the tales. Like, accelerant was used, there's gas cans everywhere and into the yard. So something suspicious happened, and it ended with him in a truck that hit a tree. So
they're like,
obviously he came from this house. So I would not have wanted to be anywhere near or make the phone call to Tammy, who is the mom of all this stuff going on.
Chaos.
Yes. So she's the owner of the house and the mom of Charles, who, you know, I would have just quit. Like, I'm not making that phone call. Like, he's out. So not only does she have to be told that her son was in the hospital because he got into a vehicle accident, that her house is on fire.
Yes, and you've lost pretty much everything.
So at that point, she was only focused on her son, and the house, you know, just had to wait because, you know, priorities. So she goes straight to the hospital, which I can understand that. I would too.
Yes.
But when she got to the hospital, though, it was not looking good. So Charles had sustained a massive head injury. And in order to assess all the other injuries and figure out what happened, they put him under a medically induced coma.
Okay.
And that's so that they can concentrate on getting him better. You know, your body heals when you're technically asleep. So right. They're just having to see what the situation is. But what was really weird was there was no broken glass and the windshield was intact.
Okay.
But he had a head trauma.
Right. But he was also wet with a belt tied around his foot.
So all this stuff is just not adding up.
Not making sense.
So.
And if he had a head trauma, did that come prior to the wreck into the tree, or when did that occur?
So that's all the answers they have to find and figure out. And okay. Like, you know, where did he hit his head? Where was the source of the water in his lungs on his clothes? And like, nothing in the car was wet. There was no water near the road or the tree or the scene of the accident. And that
and
belt,
the house is on fire. Yeah, so
that belt looped around one ankle and he had like bruising around his neck as if someone had tried to strangle him.
Okay.
And like so many questions.
Yes.
So many questions.
Did we decide on a year?
Yeah, I told you in the beginning. Let's see.
Oh, you did?
I did. 2012.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry. Sorry, everybody.
So all the evidence was pointing that he was, like, beaten and strangled. That's what it looked like.
Okay.
He had bruising on his neck. He was had head trauma. Like, obviously, something had happened to him.
Right.
But he was in a truck.
So he was placed in there by somebody, I'm assuming, because I don't know the story. So I'm just kind of deduction.
Yeah. Not right, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Not right. Okay.
Not right. So back at the house, police are trying to piece together what, you know, could fill in the blanks. Like, what's around here that could help us out?
How did this start?
So walking around the house, just checking things out and seeing if they could get anything, one of the detectives noticed a pond that was close to the house and he saw a little dock. So remember, Charles was soaking wet and did have water in his lungs. So let's go walk out to the deck and see what we can find.
Okay.
So he found a blood trail. So now it began to, like, come together. Now it was a priority to get a dive team out and scour the pond to see what, you know, they could find. So the buckle of the belt was missing from his ankle when it was removed. Like, they just had just the piece of leather, I guess.
Okay.
So it was missing the actual buckle. So the police were hoping that they would find the buckle. Like,
right.
Obviously, maybe he came from this pond. This is how we can prove that. Where's the buckle?
Yes.
So they brought in a dive team. So visibility was low. I mean, it was murky water. You can't see very well. But they did find something. So down on the bottom was a huge statue of a deer.
Okay, like a, yeah. just statue.
It's huge statue. So it'd be concrete heavy. Deer.
Yeah, concrete.
But it still had part of the belt attached.
Ooh, okay.
And so perhaps they are thinking this was used to weigh him down.
Yes.
So divers bring that up, and then not long after they brought that up, they find the buckle before the search was over. So Charles had been in the water, attached to the deer statue, in an attempt to weigh him down and drown him.
And obviously, yes, somebody, it wasn't his own doing because he got out of there somehow. So,
yep.
Okay.
So now there's the easy answer to find out what happened. They could just ask Charles, right?
Well, he's in a coma.
He's in a coma.
Okay.
He's still in that medically induced coma, and his mother by his side determined that he was going to wake up and call out who did this to him and justice would be served. Like, she even told the news, like, he is going to wake up and he's going to tell on you and we're going to figure it out.
All right. Go, mom.
Yeah. She's feisty. But.
Did she have any answers?
No. I mean, she had no idea.
Okay.
But she was determined that Charles was going to wake up and he's going to tell me exactly who did it to him. And we're going to get you. But doctors gave him a 1 in 4 million chance of survival.
Okay.
Like, that's how bad it was.
Yes.
And so those aren't hopeful odds by any means.
But
mom kept the faith, and his sister Ashley was also at the hospital. Okay. They stayed by his side. And 8 days later, a miracle happened. Slowly his eyelids start to open.
8 days is eight all it days. Took? That is a miracle.
So then he starts waving at his mom frantically, like, you know, he's awake. So of course she calls. I mean, he had a long way to go in recovery, but he was awake. So at least he was awake.
Thinking about, because I know someone who has been in this situation before, when they first wake up, they remember, if dependent on, because he had a head injury, but remember what was happening before you went under.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he was scared or just, you know, thinking, I've got to tell you what happened so you can get him.
Before I forget. Yes, like, then, yes. Then it gets fuzzy when the reality of what happened to you is set in.
And then he probably couldn't talk and, yeah.
So were just amazed that he was awake. So as soon as attackers would be called out and the mystery of what happened would be revealed. So the detectives were called and they like scrambled to the hospital to see if he could give any info. But what info he gave was terrifying. Okay, so how do you feel about where we're at now?
If what he tells is terrifying and he's trapped in the hospital and he's got to be terrified.
Yes.
Okay.
So... You know, he's in the hospital, woke up from a medically induced coma, and detectives are called, so they're like, okay, we need to find out what he knows. So, of course, Charles was hesitant at first, yeah. And then he can't speak really well. Right. I mean, the kid was drowned and, like, been, you know,
I mean, 8 days in his sleep. Brain is not, like, concussed and just crazy.
So, he did what he could. So, the police give him a notepad, and they're like, if you can't talk to us, write it down. Again, amazing that he could still write and didn't have anything going on anyway.
Yes, in his brain.
So, he writes down two names.
Okay.
Kevin Crackhead.
Crackhead?
Crackhead.
Okay.
Which is a nickname, but Kevin Crackhead and Gregory. So, Tammy, his mom, knows these boys. So, she recognized the names. So, Kevin Crackhead is actually Kevin Schrock. Schrock. It's spelled S-H-R-O-K. But police knew who he was. He was, like, already a troublemaker.
Okay. I hope this isn't one of the friends that you said he had.
So, Kevin was brought in.
To have.
And it turned out he had an alibi that actually checked out, and he was ruled out. So, Kevin Crackhead had nothing to do with it.
Okay. It's Crackhead because I guess he's...
Well, probably. Yeah. He's in the drug trade. But they couldn't get an alibi confirmation for Gregory. But they decided to hold him for a bit as they thought he might talk.
Okay.
Because there's like an hour limit you can actually hold somebody.
Okay.
In hopes that they would eventually confess or talk or whatever before you have to let them go.
Right. Okay.
Because then you don't have enough stuff on them. But, you know, he was sweating and he actually was brought to his breaking point and he spilled the tea on exactly what happened. But what they did, this was super genius, was the newspaper put an article out on Charles about what had happened to him and that he was survived and, you know, this whole ordeal and he's up and he's awake. And so they cut the article out and just stuck it on the edge of the jail cell where he had to look at it all day.
Okay.
And it drove him crazy. Like, wow. He started acting out and, like, you know, getting mad at the guards and, like, lashing out, and he just couldn't take that article just sitting there looking at him in the face.
They should have put a picture of him, too.
Well, I mean, probably was up there, but he actually tried to kill himself, but was saved by the guard in, like, the nick of time.
Okay.
And then, so enough was enough, and he's like, fine, I'll talk about it. And so then he explains everything that went down. So this is not Charles talking. This is Gregory.
Okay.
But he wrote Gregory's name down.
Right.
So now Gregory's going to spill his story. And it's a doozy. So buckle up.
Oh, man. A doozy.
Yes. So the detective went back to the hospital and he asked Charles again to, like, exactly what happened to you. Because I guess at this point he's talking.
Right.
It's like, what happened on April 11th? Like, tell me from start to finish. And what Charles told him matched up exactly with what Gregory told him.
Okay.
So then he knew that that's probably what had happened.
Got it.
Because they didn't know Gregory could have been just throwing some stuff out there just to last minute. I mean, we see that all the time. But it matched. So, of course, he wished it didn't match, but he was going to do his best to put a lot of people away for a really long time.
Because
this was really horrible. So some backstory before we get to this particular day.
Okay.
So Charles, he's 18. He's a good kid. He wants to study biotechnology. He gets straight A's. He's like just the perfect, like there's no riffraff going on. He's not involved in anything fishy. He doesn't have horrible friends. He's doing great. But he was so excited to go to prom with his friends.
Okay.
And so he'd been saving up money for months to go to prom. I mean, prom's a big deal.
Right.
I didn't ever go to mom, but it's a big deal.
Yeah.
So he really wanted to buy a suit. Like his mom's, why not rent one? A lot of people rent one.
Right.
But he thought a man should at least own a suit. So he was going to buy himself a suit.
That's cool. Especially 2012, he still had that mindset. That's awesome.
So he saved up like a bunch of money. Well, it's a couple of $100s. But he was going to buy him a suit. He wanted to take his friends to dinner, you know, rent a limo together, kind of like have a really big
That's a lot of money when you're 18.
And so he wanted to like do the whole shebang and do it right. So that Sunday,
okay.
So that Sunday after church, everyone's having dinner, family dinner, and he told everyone how excited he was about it and how he saved and what he was going to do and how great of a time he was going to have. And everyone was there eating. So his sister Ashley was there and her boyfriend, and like the whole family was proud of him and for working so hard. Everything was great. So now we're back to April 11th. So April 11th seemed like a normal day. So Gregory came over with Xavier. So Ashley's boyfriend is Xavier.
Okay.
Whose friend is Gregory.
Okay.
So they all came over, and he also brought his younger brother, Alexander. So there's like a bunch of people there at the house. And Charles told the detective, quote, they tricked me. So like everyone was hanging out. Everyone was having a good time. But then they turned on him, and they asked him for his prom money that he had saved.
This is his sister's boyfriend and his friends.
Yes.
Okay.
And so when he wouldn't just hand it over, I mean, why would you? Like, that's
exactly.
His money. He worked for it. He saved it. And, like, he's just like, no, I'm not doing that. He thought they were joking, but then things got violent.
Whoa.
So they began attacking him. So they hit him in the head with, like, he couldn't quite describe it. It was like a club. I mean, obviously, that's what caused the head trauma. He really didn't know what it was because it caught him off guard. So then, like, someone took off his own belt. So it was his belt
that they tied him up
that they tried to strangle him with it. First, they tried to strangle him with it. And that was what made the bruising on his neck. But he blacked out, but he was still breathing. So I guess they thought he was dead.
Right.
So he blacked out unconscious.
Okay.
And they tied his belt to the statue.
And then threw.
And hauled it off the deck.
That's terrible.
But once he hit the cold water, he came to because he was just knocked out. He wasn't dead.
Right.
But when he came to, he could see. So now imagine you've got a belt buckle tied to you, strapped to this 80-some pound statue that's sinking slowly, and you open your eyes and you can still see who's standing on the deck.
Yes.
Just watching you drown.
Yes.
And it was the entire group, including his sister, who was just watching him sink to the bottom of the pond.
His sister?
Mm-hmm.
So there was some dysfunction here. It had to be before all this.
Yep. So they tossed him off, leaving him for dead. So once they hit the cold water, he snaps back. He's drowning, sinking, way down with that stupid deer. And he could see all the people standing on the dock. You have Gregory, Xavier, Alexander, and Ashley, his own sister, watching and participating.
That makes me mad.
His best friend growing up. And she turns and tells everybody, let's go. And they walk away.
So we find out more about her. Is like drugs involved or oh my word.
So
that makes
by a miracle the belt broke.
Praise God.
And he was able to head for the surface. So when he got to the surface, he didn't see anyone around. So then he made his way out of the pond.
Okay.
He's staggering. He hopped in his truck.
Okay.
Hot wired it because he didn't have the keys.
Whoa. Okay.
And hit the gas.
Wow.
He didn't make it far because he hit the tree.
Okay.
But he got in the truck and started it, hotwired it. Wow. And at least he knew he had to get somewhere.
So at least he knew how to hotwire it.
Yes, I don't know how to hotwire a car.
No, me neither.
Like, yeah, kind of, sort of, but never done it.
If my key doesn't
If my life depended on it, I don't know if I could do it or not.
I know I couldn't.
Ooh, yes.
That is, just makes me, the sister, that mm-hmm. is just terrible.
So, of course, Charles is heartbroken and can't believe that his sister would intentionally try to hurt him.
Yes.
But all the evidence was there. I mean, he was there. He saw it. It happened.
Yeah.
Everyone could go away for a long time. Like, there's
just well, how about the fire? Have we gotten to that yet? Okay.
But it's just they set it on fire. I mean,
the sister.
Intentionally, everyone set it on fire. But
why? Because there's.
I don't know.
Okay.
This is not the point of the whole story.
I know.
The fire drops off at the end, and I the fire drops off.
I'm just sitting here trying to think, why would you
cover
up evidence?
Maybe they had the club in there, and, like, their clothes, or I don't know. Maybe they just, in their young minds, thought that was the best thing to do.
Right.
I don't know.
They're twisted. Evil.
But Charles decided that he did not want to testify against his sister and the friends.
But didn't Gregory give the account?
So he couldn't stand the thought of locking his sister away for the rest of her life. He loved her. The four people involved got 10 years probation.
Wait a minute. Gregory gave an account. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be on him to
He
make
didn't
that
want
decision.
To testify against his sister. I don't know how. I don't know. I don't know how. I don't know why.
I would think, like, if Gregory told who was there, then there you go. So that makes me mad, though.
But
frustrated.
The four people got 10 years probation attempted murder.
Exactly. I don't understand. That was in 2012. I mean, you think right now you could.
None of them spent any time in jail except for Gregory those few days before he decided to talk.
So see,
he didn't want to press. See, he didn't want to press charge. He didn't want to testify.
But
he's the victim. So if he didn't want to do it,
no, I don't understand that, because a crime was committed. There was evidence, and Gregory told the whole story. So that's not.
He could back. He could backtrack and say, I made it all up.
That's like.
And then if Charles doesn't want to step up and say, this is what happened, then they don't have no way to collaborate.
That's what
that.
Happened. But if he didn't, then there's something fishy with that. Because like, if a police officer, you know, if you're out there listening and you're all of this, I might be totally wrong, but if a police officer comes up on a crime being committed and the person that they see.
Well, then the police officer is a witness to the
But the person that got injured might, like, if it's a domestic situation, they might say, I don't want to press charges, you know? But I don't know. It looks like there's evidence for this, but.
But only Gregory, those few days, spent time in jail. But this is the part I cannot believe. To this day, Charles has an active relationship with his sister.
I can't get over that.
They're friends.
She had to have been on something or something.
Or maybe
crazy.
She was manipulated and just happened to be there. Maybe but
she's the one that turned around and said, let's go.
Yeah.
How about the mother? There's nothing about the mother. Because I don't know how you could. Yeah.
Well, the mother did say, I did read something in one article that she said, like, she felt like she lost her daughter that day. I mean, obviously, because I'd be like, you're dead to me. You tried to kill my other kid. Like, hello.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there trying to. You know, for him to live, and you know, the daughter had to be sweating, knowing that he was going to wake up. And
well, he did tell police that every chance Ashley got that she wasn't next to his mom, mm-hmm. She threatened him. You better not tell mom about me. You better not tell him I was there.
Oh wow!
But he did. Obviously, he told the story, but didn't. But refused to press charges.
That makes no sense, especially when there's evidence. That just doesn't make any.
But so. My brother,
okay,
love
so
him to
this.
Death, but if he beat me, tied me with a belt buckle, threw me in the river, and I somehow managed to get out, and then he's by my hospital bed, still threatening me, would I still have a relationship with you?
First
Heck
of all,
no.
You wouldn't be sitting by my hospital bed, because I'd tell my mom, do not leave her with me. She's the one who was there.
And then my butt would testify against you, so Billy, if you're listening, you're in trouble.
And I don't understand... how you can go through the rest of your life even wanting to be around her because you can't trust her.
No.
None of them.
I read that and was like, why? I mean,
I don't
get
it.
It's his prerogative if he forgives
her.
That's his thing. But I could not do that.
That's like the story of the mom whose son, you know.
Tried to kill her with an axe.
Yes, yes.
And she stood up for him in court and still friends with him. Yes. Like, lady, you are crazy.
I just don't
If you don't know that story, did we talk about that story? I think we did.
That's why I only, that's the only reason I know it.
She was crazy to have a relationship with her son who tried to murder her in her sleep.
All right, so go back to the arson. If you know they did something with arson,
you wouldn't be allowed in my house again.
So what time out to getting back to him not wanting to press charges? Okay, you burned my house down. It just doesn't matter if I press charges. They're going to press charges against you because you burned my house down.
They didn't
say
they didn't prove who burned. They didn't. That never came up again.
No, not about the house. I'm trying to make that correlation to he didn't want to press charges, but it shouldn't matter because they had evidence that the crime was committed. Yeah. They could prove all that. So to me, that's the same as what I'm saying about arson.
Yeah.
You can prove it, but just because you burned my house down, if I choose not to press charges, I don't get that. But if you have comments about how that would work, and of course, different states do different things. But I was just, not that the house mattered, but I was just making a correlation.
Yeah, I got you.
If I damage your car and you don't want to press charges, there was still a crime committed.
But how many times do we see it where it's like he said, she said, that I said that, but now I'm taking it back.
But I mean, there's got to be proof, fingerprints. I mean, there had to be tons of proof that physically connected those group of four people with him. So, but anyway.
But I don't know how it works if he was the victim and ultimately decided I'm dropping charges. I don't want anything to, think about.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it shouldn't if it does. So let us know if you're legal experts because we are just, by the seat of our pants. Yeah, no, that was definitely a twisty one. They were evil. I couldn't be around them anymore. I mean,
all for a couple of $100. It wasn't like he had a life insurance policy or they got an inheritance. It was a couple of $100 for prom money.
And they were older, right?
Yeah.
So they were obviously not making good choices in their life if they had to beat up a kid.
But like Tammy, bless her heart.
The mother?
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder if she still has contact with the daughter.
Well, she said she felt like she lost her daughter that day. I wouldn't.
I wouldn't either.
Well, I mean, Charles is a grown man. He can do what he wants to do, but I wouldn't be like, you're not stepping in my house at all.
Do I dare ask, if he continued to be a biotech?
I don't know.
So.
Didn't do that much research.
I have to ask, I'm sorry.
Well, I knew the house fire was going to come up again, but in the story, that's all it was. They talked about the house being on fire, but that led them to the dock, led them to the blood trail that found the belt buckle. Yeah. So
it looks like there would be enough evidence whether he testified or not, but I don't know. I just don't get anybody.
Maybe she'll do
away
something that'll make him mad and statute of limitations hasn't passed, and he'll be like, guess what? Remember that day?
He sounds like a really sweet, humble guy that he easily forgives, obviously, which we need to all be more forgiving of things. But that one right there, ooh, doggy, I don't know. I'd probably forgive, but you're going to be in jail because I don't trust you. So
this was not as twisty-turny as the one we had last week. That was doozy too.
I know. I read that story so many times, and I still kept getting surprised.
So if you haven't listened to that one, you should listen to the 14-hour marriage. That was the last time. So this one is about Charles Hardiman and just how awesome he is to make it through that.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
And to still be nice enough to talk to his sister, bless him. She better be thankful. She better be nice to him because she could have ended up
really
locked up.
True.
And it's because of him that she's not.
Yeah.
So
maybe that,
I hope that has,
maybe that was a catalyst to change all of their lives.
Maybe.
And probably move away from town. Cause who's going to trust you? Oof. I mean, I'd be like, so-and-so just came in the door. I'm going to change. I'll be sitting against the wall. I don't know.
Keep an eye on her.
Yeah. But it was very, I thought it was very interesting. So thank y'all for joining us. And again, I don't know legal stuff. I just know my passion of you need to pay for the crime.
Exactly.
Whether it's 2012 or 2023.
Well, hopefully that they, get what's coming to them soon.
Well, and I mean, forgiveness is a powerful tool. And I hopefully he was able to move on and be successful in life, I hope. So. Mm-hmm. Because he would be, 30 years old now?
Yeah.
So,
don't know what he's up to, but
well,
hope he's
doing
well. If you
do, let us know. If you live in Mississippi, you know the story, or we do hope so. He's definitely a strong young man that has a lot of character and integrity, it sounds like, to do that. So, thank you for joining us.
Yep, there's that. I didn't jump this time.
Yeah, you're getting used to it.
So
my air conditioner came on.
If you follow us on Facebook, Old Time Crime Gals, and we have email, oldtimecrimegals@gmail.com. We are, I think, 12 maybe members away from 100. Woohoo! Wow. Group. But when we get to 100, we're going to do a live of some sort to be determined. Shannon's agreed to it.
I have.
So make sure you check us out and share us, rate us, and all that stuff. And if you, there's a story you want to hear, let us know because we always love that. But just in the meantime, remember,
if you do the crime, it's going to catch up with you in time.
And we'll talk about it. Until next time.